The Bible and Modern Science with your host, Dr. Joseph Henson of the Science Faculty of Bob Jones University. Here is Dr. Henson.
Thank you. On our last program, we began a series of programs dealing with the idea of unaccounted for gaps or discontinuities. I had listed several of those: the gap between nothing and something, the gap between energy and atoms, between inorganic chemicals and organic chemicals, between molecules and the first cell, between unicellular and multicellular organisms, between plants and animals, between animals and man, between the major divisions of classification, differences between organisms in different phyla, or differences between organisms in different classes within each phyla. And this probably could be extended greatly. And as I mentioned on the last program, it's not my intention to be tedious about this. But I'm aware that there are a great many believers who really have never had any access to or had a great deal of training in science. And if they are looking at evolution as something which is scientific, then that lack of knowledge of science may cause them simply to sort of retreat into a corner and cover their heads and think there really is nothing that can be said in opposition to it. And this is part of the reason for our spending time here. Now, one of the first things we did when we began the series was to deal at great length with what science is. And among other things, we argued that in order for something to be science, it has to involve a warm body. There has to be a rational human being who can gather information through his senses, accumulate that information, and then come to conclusions about it. This imposes then a limitation that if we are discussing something which occurred without the possibility of human perception, then it is not possible to talk about that within a scientific framework. And the area that we are at least beginning this discussion with certainly is one of those. When we start trying to wrestle with the question of how did matter come into existence when there is no matter, it shouldn't cause anybody difficulties, and it shouldn't be a matter of argument that this isn't science. If man is necessary to science, then we are discussing those things that happen. If you're an evolutionist, long before man got here. If you're a creationist, the initial acts of creation occurred before man came on the scene. So when we start talking about origins, there simply is no possibility for that to be a scientific subject. And I think that's important for Bible believers to understand. You will hear evolutionists who talk very authoritatively and very dogmatically and act as though the statement of that makes it true. And again, there are Christians who simply have no basis to argue with it. I'm not trying to argue here you need a PhD in some area of science. All you need is a reasonable amount of common sense, and you'll understand that this discussion is a philosophical discussion. It is not a scientific discussion. Now, again, we went to some length to argue that the creationist position was the only reasonable view of origins. It seems rather plain to me that if human beings want information about how things got here, the only possible source of that information is to have someone who was there tell you about it. And this is what we argue we have in the Scripture, that in the Scripture we have information given to us by the Creator about what He did at the time of creation. Now, if that idea is incorrect, or if our revelation, the Scripture, is in error, then the fact is we don't have any information about that. But be all that as it may, if you have a person who rejects the Scripture, who rejects the possibility of revelation by the Creator, then there simply is no possibility of that individual having any kind of actual information about what happened. And for unbelievers who simply reject the idea of God or reject the idea of Scripture, fact is they don't know what happened. So they start dreaming up things. And some of these actually get very interesting. We're going to look at a quote shortly from an individual many people would recognize, Isaac Asimov. And when I give you that quote, I want you to think carefully about what the man is saying. And we will have occasion later to look at some other quotes that say essentially the same thing. I would urge those of you who are listening, who are believers, when you have occasion to listen to comments of men like this, that you ask yourself two very simple questions. Number one, was the person who is making the comment, written or oral, present to observe or perceive what he's describing? And if the answer to that is no, then ask a second question. Was it possible for any other person to have been there? And if the answer to both those questions is no, then that person or persons are talking about Alice in Wonderland. Now, this may be clothed in all the technical jargon you want to talk about, but it still is something that occurred without the possibility of human beings using their senses to gather information. So you have individuals then who ultimately get to the point where they decide, simply because I say it, it becomes true. And after that has been repeated, Hitler's notion that if you repeat a lie long enough, people will believe it. Now, you present an idea often enough and persuasively enough and in technical terms and so on, people, some of whom even know better, will simply come to the point where they just assume that all this is. And what I'm trying to get across to you is that you be careful to distinguish between what the actual information is, what the facts are, and what the assumptions are. And if you will sort out the assumptions from the facts, then I think it will be very helpful in getting to the point where you can respond appropriately to whatever it happens to be. So those were the discontinuities, the gaps that we had listed. Now, understanding that it is not possible to have a person, a human, that has personal knowledge of what happened when our Earth, our solar system, our galaxy, our universe came into existence. If that is settled initially, then you understand that when you are reading any person's comments that are not based on biblical revelation, they are simply human opinions, and they need to be accepted as such. Nothing more, nothing less. And our human sensory information is unbelievably limited. We talked in an earlier program. I listen sometimes to and read sometimes comments by astronomers, and particularly with NASA and all of the efforts in the space discovery and so on, you get some very dogmatic statements on occasion, but you have to understand that the actual data, the actual facts of this branch of science are events that occur in the laboratory. They are not events occurring in space. And once that happens, then you can begin to understand how meager the actual information is. Now, that information is gathered, and if you are of an evolutionary frame of mind, then it's not difficult to begin to postulate and assume. And after a while, I think even for the individual himself, he gets to the point he forgets that those are assumptions. And he simply begins to take the assumptions as though they were real and build a framework, a mechanism, which in time he looks on as an absolutely accurate explanation for whatever it is we're talking about. Now, let's look at the comment by Asimov. And for those of you that have listened to the broadcast, you're aware that usually you have to engage your mind a little bit and think. And I want you to listen carefully to what he said. I'm reading I want to read two comments which came from an article that was entitled What is Beyond the Universe? It was published in the Science Digest, April of 1974, on page 69. Now, the first statement is this. This is Asimov now. Quote, where did the substance of the universe come from? What is beyond the edge of the universe? End quote. And this is simply a succinct question, or two questions actually, dealing with the origin of the material stuff that we find in our universe. I make another comment here. We live in a universe which is amenable to human perception. You can see tree leaves. You can hold dirt in your hands. You can get stung by a scorpion or bitten by a mosquito, or you can throw a rock through a window pane. We live in a universe of matter, and our senses are capable of giving us information about that matter. So we're not, again, one of the early programs, one of the possibilities for the origin of things had to do with the idea that everything, there's no origin, it's always been here, and we'll touch on that a little bit later. The idea is eternal. The second was it's just imaginary, everything's just imaginary, there is no reality, which is the view that particularly folks that are involved in Eastern Oriental meditation religions have. And I commented when we were discussing that if you have a person who's serious about that, you have a person for whom it is forever impossible to know truth. And the other two possibilities were spontaneous generation, which we're going to pursue shortly, and the idea of creation. Now, those are the possibilities. And some of them, you'll recall, I hope some of you, if you listen, that we eliminated. We eliminated the idea that our Earth is eternal or that our universe is eternal. And basically, it had to do with the fact that our universe is running down. And some scientists, to the contrary notwithstanding, there is no evidence of exceptions to this. Now, we're going to look at some quotes from scientists who are arguing that matter is constantly appearing around us without any ability for us to detect it. This is Alice in Wonderland, folks. It is not science. Believe it if you wish to. Argue it. Defend it if you want to. But we're not talking science. We're talking an assumption, and in my opinion, a rather wild-eyed one. Now, Asimov is simply asking the question, how do we deal with this idea of looking at a universe, unbelievably complicated, large universe? Where did it come from? How did it get here? Now, the fact that it's here, no sensible person can argue against. But the question of how it got here and what occurred to bring about the change from nothing to something is the question that we're dealing with. Our time is up on this program, and we'll continue this quote by Asimov on the next program. But I think you'll see a good example of what I've talked to you about as being an assumption.
Thank you, Dr. Henson. You may send email to Dr. Henson at jhenson@bju.edu. That's jhenson@bju.edu. Or write to Dr. Joseph L. Henson, Box 34621, Bob Jones University, Greenville, South Carolina, zip code 29614, in the United States of America. You're invited to listen next time for The Bible and Modern Science.